Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together. In this episode, you get a chance to hear from Melanie Hirshhorn, who runs VIP Book Marketing and Publishing. She is a book strategist, marketing strategist, a book publisher, and she serves real estate professionals, business owners, not just real estate, but business owners, consultants, and speakers. And she's on a mission to empower authors to share their messages with the world. Really, really cool episode here. And, you know, we walk through several things that, kind of growth periods in Melanie's own entrepreneurial story, particularly how she for many years didn't feel good enough, didn't feel like she was ever going to make enough money, didn't feel like she was ever really worth enough. And then and something that was said to her by her father that actually kind of crushed her for a few months. And that enabled her, through working with therapists and a coach, to, I think in her words, break that glass ceiling that she'd self-imposed. And then all of a sudden her world just opened up. Her self-limiting beliefs went away. She bet on herself and went out on her own, and has just been experiencing organic growth ever since then. And you can just tell that she's a trustworthy, giving individual who really wants to serve and help her clients make an impact and more income. And particularly, she's focused on the forest, not just the trees, meaning how does creating a book that tells your individual story, how does that impact your business and your overall brand, company brand and personal brand? Not just how do you market a book, or how do you write a book, or how do you publish a book, but the big picture, how do you use your story through a book to benefit your business and ultimately serve your clients and benefit the world? This is a fantastic episode.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled today to have with us Melanie Hirshhorn. Melanie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Hey, did you know that From Adversity to Abundance is also a book?
I actually did know that, but I think if any of the listeners for some random reason did not know that, they should Google it.
They should totally go to Amazon and pick up a copy.
That too, or 10 copies for loved ones. But let's I love that. That's awesome. It is a fantastic book, in my opinion, and there's so much wisdom and inspiration packed into a pretty easy read. So highly recommend that one. Yes, I am 100% biased. But although we may touch on that later, the episode is not going to be focused on that entirely. It's mostly about Melanie and her story and how Melanie adds value to entrepreneurs and real estate investors, and specifically pertaining to marketing of books. But Melanie, you can describe what you do a lot better than I can. So why don't you do that for the listener?
All right, well, you did pretty well. I am an independent publisher and a book marketer. And so what I'm helping people do is write, publish, and market the book so that they can really leverage it to grow their business. Because memoirs are awesome, but they're not going to, you know, bring money in the door. And when you're self-publishing, or just in general, when you're publishing a book, you're not going to get rich on book sales. So what I really help my clients with is leveraging that book to bring it, to have impact, income, and influence in their chosen field.
That's awesome. Briefly, and before we jump into your backstory, and I know it hasn't always been smooth sailing for you in every facet of your life, including business and relationships. So we're going to dive into a lot of that. But before we get there, briefly, what gives you any kind of credibility to help entrepreneurs on that front?
Well, I published a book. Does that count?
I think that goes a long way for sure.
So I think, you know, my career has been one where I've been able to take from my different jobs and really have a 360 degree view of what makes a book successful and how to make a business successful. So I've been a celebrity publicist. I have a master's in journalism. I've worked as a journalist, and I've been an entrepreneur for 12 years. So I really see how I see the forest for the trees. If mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to at times see the trees, but absolutely be able to zoom out and not miss the forest for sure. But let's jump back. I know, like I alluded to, you've had some challenges over the years.
What are you talking about? Easy peasy.
No, yeah, it's just a straight line up and to the right, straight line to success.
Always, yes. That's the only direction I go.
Mm-hmm. In all seriousness, all right, let's jump back. What where do you want to start, Melanie?
Well, I'll just say, you know, childhood up through the end of high school, I come from a family that is all in the medical field.
Okay.
I am not a sciencey person.
Got it.
At all. I have a calculator because I cannot do mental math in my head. That's why sure. I'm so, I don't want to say envious, but I have such kudos for, you know, realtors and brokers who can look and go, well, it's 1100 per square foot. And that caught, I'm like,
I'm out.
Headlights. Right. Like, hold on. Can't find my phone, my calculator app. Hold on. So,
right.
But I'm a big, you know, kudos to you.
Not a numbers person. Yeah.
Not, no, but I love math, but I just can't do it in my head.
Got it.
Really
got
good
it.
On paper. So I was always, you know, people just assumed that I was going to go into that, and that I've always been much more creative, much more artistically inclined, much more interested in people and, you know, stories.
Yeah.
And so
love that.
I was going to college, and I don't know what I was going to study, because what do you study when you don't want to be a doctor? I don't know.
I think a lot of people can relate to not knowing what they want to do in college.
So I studied history, and I loved it so much. But then I graduated, and then it was like, well, what am I going to do now?
Sure.
And I thought, well, maybe I'll take the LSAT. And my father was so excited because he thought I was going to be a lawyer. And then I chickened out. And I never took it. So I always felt that I was not going to be enough.
Mm. You weren't going to be good enough.
I'm not going to be good enough. I'm not going to make enough. I will never make money. I'll never make money because I'm not a doctor.
Right. The creative people just don't make money. And that's who you are. And that's what it is. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I went and got a master's in journalism, and I worked as a journalist. And my first year out, I'll give you numbers. We'll talk numbers.
Yeah.
My first year, I was making $37,000.
Nice.
And then the following year, there were budget cuts.
Wow.
And I made less.
Wow.
That's not a lot of money.
No. No. You don't typically go into journalism for just for the money, right?
Well, no, but yeah. Then you see the people on TV and they're making boatloads. I mean, I always wanted to be Oprah, and she makes a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So I had resigned myself to thinking, well, clearly, I'm not going to pass muster. I'm not going to be smart enough.
Right.
Or not necessarily smart enough, but I'm not going to be able to do what it takes to make a lot of money.
Sure. The end result is not going to be that you're producing a high income. Even if you are smart, it's just not going to result in being wealthy.
Right. So what did I do? I married a doctor.
There you go.
Because, it wasn't like I set out to find a doctor to marry. That wasn't what it was. But I do think that the universe was like, well, clearly you don't believe that you can have a successful life unless you're married to a doctor. So here we are. Here is one.
Yep.
And so when I got laid off, when I was pregnant with my first child, and all of a sudden my husband was the one, carrying us on his like marginal salary as a resident. Mm. I just felt so beaten down.
Mm.
And, I was like, I am now unemployed and unemployable.
Mm. Now, just briefly, obviously up to you how much detail you want to give, but why were you laid off? Was that budget cuts or?
Yeah.
Okay.
A third year budget cuts. Cause I was working at an NPR affiliate and all their money came from the state.
Got it.
And those horrible drives that, the money drives where you're like,
call
this number and give us money. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And because I was pregnant and unfortunately that company was notorious for laying off pregnant women.
Hmm. Wow.
But there were 20 other people that got laid off at the same time as me, and that's not a court case. So I was, it's just sort of at a crossroads. And I was very lucky that, I mean, for my brain, not for my bank account, but the managing editor of the local newspaper called me about a week after I was laid off. And she said, we want you to come and be a freelancer for us.
Nice.
And I said, but Kate, I'm pregnant. And she said, I don't care.
That's awesome. So how did she know you had been laid off?
It was in the news.
Oh, wow. Got it.
Which is something that as a journalist, you don't want to be in the news.
But that makes sense. Right.
You don't want to be
if you're in the news. Right.
Right. Yeah. There are plenty of people who've been laid off recently from their respective journalism outlets that they they are not happy to be in the news either.
Got it.
So I did that. It wasn't, very lucrative, but it kept my brain fun, kept me in the game, made me feel like an adult, like a human.
Right.
And so my husband got a job because, now he's like a full-time doctor. So we got a job here in Arizona. And so we moved across the country to be in Arizona. And I thought, well, I can try to find a job in journalism and pay a nanny or a caregiver or a daycare more than I will actually make. Cause now you guys know what a starting salary is.
Right.
And I said, or I can do this thing. So I had this idea to design and manufacture breastfeeding clothing.
Okay.
Right. Total left turn.
Can't say I've ever had that idea. But.
Okay. Well, if everybody did, it wouldn't have been an interesting idea then, I guess.
Fair point. So
I did that and I trusted my gut. I don't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I Googled, I found somebody to do the designs for me and make them for me. And then I got a company in LA to manufacture them for me. And then I was selling them on Nordstrom.com and on Amazon in boutiques. And I'm like, wow, I'm a real entrepreneur.
That's so cool.
And thank you. It sounds awesome, right?
Right.
But now, because we're talking about adversity and we're not like all shiny here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The truth
keep
was
it real in this show.
Yes. And the truth was I didn't take home a salary.
Gotcha. So in 7 years?
In 7 years.
Oh, wow. Did you make any money in 7 years?
The business did.
Okay. Got it.
All went back into the business.
Yeah. Understood.
And so that was mistake number one.
Well, so let's start briefly. I mean, and one thing I keep hearing, whether you're intending it or not, you're focused on your thoughts and your just mental approach to your situation, which I think is it just speaks to the importance of that, because you just never you mentioned you didn't think you were going to be enough, and but eventually you ended up believing in yourself and betting on yourself, and these are all sort of mental, the mental positioning that your mental gymnastics and how your own perspective of yourself and your situation impacts your life and your actions. But I think that's just something really critical to emphasize. It plays such a big role in things. So the 7 year business was a mistake entirely, or
No.
okay.
No, I have no regrets in life.
Nice. Yeah, is that that tattoo?
Yes, I was then, but I could never get a tattoo because it's too permanent. And
Fair.
I couldn't name my stuffed animals when I was a child because that was too permanent also.
Too much commitment.
Too much
Gotcha.
commitment.
Love
Yeah, but I commit to myself. That I can commit to.
that. Yeah. So actually, and what was it that made you really believe in yourself when you before you, when you decided to go all in on that idea, why did you
Nothing.
believe in yourself?
I've always believed in myself
Got it. Okay.
against all odds. There are other
Awesome.
things I'm not going to bore you with,
Yeah,
but no
fair.
matter what, I've always believed in myself.
I love that. Well, and one thing the I just had a recent episode that just came out. At this point, it will have been a few weeks ago, but Mark Passarelli, he mentioned if you don't believe in yourself, why should anyone else believe in you, right? And if you don't believe that you can make it as an entrepreneur, why should anyone purchase your product or have any faith in you at all? So it kind of starts there. So I love that. So
It's
looking
true.
at that 7 year period, what came out of that was a positive?
Knowing that if I have an idea, I can bring it to fruition against all odds.
Love it.
Knowing that I'm smart enough,
Yeah.
that I'm good with people.
That's beautiful.
And it is. People are. I love learning from people. Like I could
Yeah.
just like this, and you could tell me all about you. In
Right.
fact, if this weren't your podcast, I would make you tell me all about your life because I am so interested.
Yeah,
And
I love it too. I mean, it's one reason I love doing the show is just I get to learn so much personally, and I do take a big interest in people's stories and backgrounds. So you should start a podcast as well. But
oh. I had one. I had one. It was fun.
it is a good bit of work. But not saying you're afraid of work, but it's definitely a long game, and there's a lot of work to it. But
That's
I'm
true.
with you though, just briefly. I mean, I was always good at math and science. Since you want to know about me, right? I was always good at math and science, and the sort of the engineering type facet of life, I guess, if you will. But I always kind of had that, interest in people as well, as especially as I've gotten older, I've appreciated history and stories more. And so, I guess I always thought, oh, well, I'm not creative, right? The kind of the
Right.
opposite of you, right?
The
I'm not
opposite.
creative, and I'm this like I'm only like analytical math and science. And the reality is, entrepreneurs create, and that doesn't mean I have to be artistic per se. Like creating means, adding value or building, right? Or generating something out of nothing, or taking the parts and assembling something better, right? And so that's creating. And so I am actually creative. It's
Yes.
taken me a while to realize that, but I love that sort of, crossover from, yeah, I can do the numbers, and I do generally default to facts and, the analysis side of things, but I really people and adding value to people, and listening and learning from people. Those are critically important skills that I think for entrepreneurs are super, super valuable. But all right, so I cut you off. So your 7-year business. So what did you take from that?
So the things about, you know, if I build it, it can happen. Mm-hmm. and my, you know, I brushed up my PR skills. I got myself on TV. I got myself in magazines. But I think the bad thing that happened mm-hmm. was the best thing that happened.
Okay. How so?
So the bad thing that happened was, well, I'll be really, really transparent. I don't know how to be any other way.
Yeah.
I was doing these baby gifting suites for celebrities.
Okay.
And because I thought, here's the transparency, I thought if celebrities wore my clothes, that would just be like the magic fairy dust to make my business take off.
Sure.
So I was going to these celebrity gifting suites, which if you don't know what that is, I will just give you a quick primer. It's a room where you set up a booth and then B, C, sometimes A, if you're lucky, celebrities mm-hmm. will walk through and get your stuff for free. And in exchange, they will maybe tweet it out or you could let you take a picture with them. Mm-hmm. And the goal is for them to fall in love with your product so much that they post about it on Instagram and then you're the next big thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so like yesterday I saw an Instagram reel where Jim Carrey had a reel of this, some little camera, mm-hmm. this minor, you know, you could take this minuscule camera and stick it somewhere. And I guess, you know, I guess I just thought was he paid to do that or maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. And this was before the word influencer was really part of our vernacular.
Sure, sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was in same idea, you know, anything that, you know, a Kardashian touches turns to gold.
Right.
So this woman who ran those suites reached out to me and she said, you know, I'm doing marketing now for baby brands. I think you need my help. And this is where my putting people up on pedestals problem showed up.
Okay.
And I said, sure. And it was bad. I paid her 25 grand over the course of a year. She helped me grow my Instagram following, mm-hmm. but none of those people were ever going to buy the stuff. Mm-hmm. And she also belittled me at every turn.
Really?
How could you have a master's degree? You're so boring when you write.
Wow.
And other things. And my husband would say, you're paying her. Why are you letting her do this? And you're giving me that look. And and I said, and I maintain this, what if she does the smear campaign online and I can't sell my products anymore and I'm totally ruined, everything online is permanent and I'm destroyed.
Right.
So obviously, worst case scenario, catastrophizing.
Sure.
And
operating out of fear, right?
Operating out of fear. I have lived in that place. It is not fun. Mm-hmm. And this went on for a year. And I was a shell of myself after a while. And this was when, you know, things got stressful in my marriage because he's like, you're not taking home an income. Mm-hmm. You know, you're spending all this time on your business and we're paying a babysitter to spend time with our child when that should be something you're doing, but that's a whole other animal. I'm not going to go there. And like, you're not contributing to the pot that, you know, so if your time and I can see it
from his perspective,
but at the time, I could not see it because the way I saw this business was my sanity. When I didn't, you know, I don't think I was put on this earth to be a mom. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I turned 30 that I even entertained the idea of having children. And I love my kids to the ends of the earth.
Of course.
And I love being their mom.
Right.
But I am not one of those girls who played baby doll and pretend, meh. Like
Yeah,
I wanted to
definitely.
like run a Fortune 500 company kind of thing.
Got
So,
it. Yeah.
it was, how am I going to reconcile being a mom when I'm talking to a 1-year-old? Like I need other like adult interaction. Anyway, so the
Sure.
business
Yep.
kept me sane.
Right. Understood.
And yes, you can think of it, well, it's a super expensive hobby. Whatever.
Yeah.
It was still mine.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I can, as I'm listening, and I'm not going to go take too much time on this, but I can relate in a lot of ways, both from the entrepreneur perspective and from the spouse perspective. And entrepreneurship can be very taxing on a marriage, whether you're working with your spouse or not, and especially if your income is not high and, an
Or at
entrepreneur,
all,
or at all,
or at
right?
all.
And most businesses fail, right? I mean, it's got a very high failure rate, and it's we like again, I like to keep it real on this show for real estate entrepreneurs, whether those are agents or investors. No matter what the business actually is, it can be taxing. It's not for everyone, and I don't. You should really think through whether you truly want to be an entrepreneur. Every situation is different, but I can speak from experience that yeah, when businesses are not going well, and our cost, the money's going the other way into the business, not from the business to you, man, it can really put a strain on a marriage. And my wife took a job for a couple of years where she, in the grand scheme of things, wasn't making a lot of money. But it was her sanity and her, she was the same kind of thing. Like, and so I do see that, but it also did put a lot of stress on the family. And I've put stress on the family, to be clear. I'm not just
Oh,
pointing
you're not
fingers.
perfect.
Yeah,
Okay.
no, right. Believe it or not, are you
Believe
shocked?
it or not.
But so anyway, I think a lot of, I know I can relate to kind of multiple characters in that story, in your story, if you will. And I'm sure a lot of people can. So, what did that, how did that end up?
Well, right. So the issue, so it wasn't just that this was my sanity. There's also the other piece that we started with about how I'm not a doctor.
Right. So, yeah.
So I'm juggling both of these, and I'm just feeling worse and worse and worse about myself.
About your self-worth, right? Is that pretty much, yeah.
100%. And my dad won't ever hear this podcast, so I can tell you this. About 2 years ago, my dad came to visit and we were chatting, and he mentions that my sister, who's also a doctor, and my father's a doctor, my sister makes a lot of money.
That's what he said to you.
And he didn't mean it in any way,
Right.
but it was like getting hit in the chest with Thor's giant hammer.
Yeah, right. Not fun.
And I'm thankful that that happened because I got to finally break free of the glass ceiling that I had self-imposed.
That's we need to make sure that's a quote. What you just said there when we're marketing this episode, that was really good. So dive into that. What does that mean?
Well, when he left, I spent the next week in and out of tears. I'm never gonna make money. I'm never gonna be good enough. I'm all these things. I'm not a doctor. I blah, blah, blah. And then I started coming out of the fog and going, but why not? There are so many entrepreneurs that make bazillions of money, and doctors are capped at what they can earn.
For sure.
Why wouldn't I make a lot of money? And it had sort of been this weird mantra I kept telling myself. I have to be a millionaire. I have to be a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, but why? And so it took several months, but I broke out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the fog lifted.
And what was that process? I mean, it was just self.
No, are you kidding? No, I have a business coach. I have a therapist. I have.
Thank you.
All sorts. Please, it takes a village.
Yeah.
just on our, just in my family, we have like seven therapists between four people.
Got it.
I'm a big fan of getting help with your mental health. Mm-hmm. And whereas, you know, and I just turned 45. So when I was a kid, it was not okay to have a therapist. It was very embarrassing and like you're mortified and nobody should know. Mom, don't say anything.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you, I was at my kid's third grade class. And he was playing with some putty that I had bought for him on Amazon, but it's called therapy putty.
Oh, right.
And so he says to a girl comes up to him and she says, "What's that?" And he goes, "Oh, it's therapy putty." She's like, "Where'd you get it?" He goes, "My therapist," which wasn't true, but he has a therapist. Anyway, gotcha. We all have therapy. So, and she says, "I want a therapist."
That's so funny.
And I was like,
that is so different from
this is
how
so
we grew
different.
Up.
I mean, these kids are going through, they're going social emotional learning in school. They're talking about feelings and all this stuff. Anyway, so I do not believe you can do it alone, but I definitely believe you have to put in the work. And so when I, well, just to backtrack, when I closed that business, I thought, well, what do I do now? And I looked at the through line of my career and it was always helping people share their stories and their voices. And so that's what I do now too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I don't wake up every day and think, oh, I'm not a millionaire yet. I just think about the sky's the limit.
I love that. And you're not as focused, it sounds like, on some end result from
arbitrary,
you know, 20 years from now or whenever it's going to be, you know,
but
it's just adding value to other people now. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you might end up being a billionaire. I mean, you've there's no reason to cap it at 1 million or, you know, okay. So several months of self-reflection and working with coaches and therapists and sort of working through what had, you know, was triggered by your father's comment,
mm-hmm.
but obviously there were underlying you know, issues and
it
feelings.
Broke it wide open.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so what action steps did you take after those few months?
Well, I mean, my business has grown.
Let's talk about it. Okay, so what did your current business look like when you started it? And then walk us through kind of the growth and where it is today.
So when I started my business, it was marketing. I mm-hmm. didn't know for whom or what.
Yeah.
And then it moved into book marketing. And then a couple years ago, I said, wait a second. If I help people write, publish, and market their books, I'm going to help them guarantee success with their book as opposed to just publishing it or just marketing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I had the courage or the stupidity to decide that, no, I'm kidding. It's definitely courage that I could do this and I could help people publish. And so I sort of stood there, I put my arms out in my best superhero pose and said, I'm a publisher now.
That's awesome. And you had examined what, like you said, the through line and what had worked for you over the years and what, you know, maybe you, the ways that you're wired and what you're good at and what you enjoy. Briefly touch on, and there's no one size fits all answer here, but for some people say, you know, for career advice, business advice, life advice, really follow your passion, do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Other people say, focus on adding value and you know, how you could help others. And then you'll end up enjoying whatever that is because you're making more money and you're serving people. And it's not black or white, we know. But what's your take on that? And how did you approach that? And what's your take for other entrepreneurs out there?
I don't know if I gave it that much thought.
Gotcha. Well, how about now then? If
Well, I mean, when you ask this question, the first thing I think of is, well, I just do what I enjoy.
Gotcha.
I just do what I gravitate to, and I don't
Yeah.
really overthink it.
Sure.
And I know I always know what I don't want. I'm really good at knowing what I don't want. And when I find something that I do want, I'm like, oh, I'll just do this. You know, to my first job out of college, I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a history degree. I didn't want to be a historian.
Right. It's not real marketable.
And that, and you get like lung issues from being in the trenches of basements in the middle of, anyway. So I was talking to a friend of mine. She's been a friend since we were 8 years old. And I said, I have no idea what I'm going to do when I graduate. And she says, you should try PR. I think you'd be really good at that. And I said, okay. And then I did. So I think part of it is I like change. And a lot of people are afraid of change. And I'm like, bring it on.
Gotcha.
There have been many twists and turns.
Sure.
And I don't like stagnation. I like to just keep learning and keep
Yeah.
doing and keep
Growth.
growing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But that, not everybody has a servant's heart. And also, I was in denial of mine
Okay.
because I thought that that's not how you make money. You have to be an a-hole to make money.
Right. Yeah, that's an important distinction too. Just people get this view of all rich people are greedy and selfish, and that's just not true. I mean, certainly
Nope.
there are greedy and selfish wealthy people out there,
They're
but 100%.
also greedy and selfish poor people.
And I love just the mental shift of really focusing on, yes, doing what you love, but ultimately for you, doing what you love is serving others, it sounds like, right? So it's not
Yeah, it
really an
is.
either or.
But
It's
it took me a while to really embody that and embrace it
sure.
and be like, because I used to think that was a weakness.
Got it. Okay. All right. So, but you're less at that point when you started your current business, you were less focused on becoming a millionaire and the eventual outcome, and you're more focused on leaning into what you're good at, what had worked for you over the years, but serving others and helping them share their story and add value to their own businesses and their own lives. So, broad brush from starting, day one of your business through today, what have been sort of the ups and downs of your business growth?
Hiring a business coach who told me what I should be doing, and it wasn't what I was doing, what I wanted to do. And I was just like, well, if you say so, I have to do it. And then my time with her ended, and I started working with another one. And she said, well, do you want to be doing this anymore? And I said, no, can I stop? She was like, of course you can. It's your business.
Right. That's awesome.
And so I think that I have been my own worst boss
Okay.
ever. I mean, and I've had some, I worked in Hollywood, so
So
I've
you've
had
had some
some
bad
bad
bosses.
bosses,
Sure.
but I was the worst of all
And that's,
because,
yeah, why is that?
I made myself work every day, 7 days a week, as much as I possibly could. I don't even know what I was doing because I don't think I was accomplishing much.
Well,
And
that
I,
is a trap that it's very easy to fall into. I can speak from experience. Like you start feeling like, well, I got to be working because I got to add value to my business, and yeah, there's a the it's a it's a you reach a point of limited returns for sure. Okay, so and then how long have you had your current business for?
about 5 years now.
5 years. And so you got a new business coach. She gave you permission to focus on what you wanted to do, right? And lean into that. And then what happened after that?
It was scary
How so?
because I got rid of all the clients that I was doing copywriting for.
That would be scary.
It was really scary. And I said, okay, I'm doing marketing now. And people started calling me and I couldn't believe it. There's this whole piece of trust.
Okay.
This it's the trust piece that I couldn't understand before.
And trusting yourself, trusting
trusting myself.
Okay.
Trusting that things are going to happen for me.
Got it. Briefly, what's the difference between copywriting and marketing? Like, what, for those who are unfamiliar with your world?
Oh, sure. What is so that copywriting mean? I was literally writing the marketing emails for people. I was writing their social media posts.
Got it.
And posting on their behalf.
For their books or
no, this was just for just business in general.
Got it.
And then after that, mm-hmm. when I realized I didn't have to do it anymore, mm-hmm. that's when I moved into the book area, the
Got
book
it.
Space.
Understood. Perfect. Yeah. And marketing books, how did that become the focus?
Well, authors started calling.
Okay.
And I went, there's a gap.
Yeah, there's a need, right?
There's a need here. Yeah. And it was organic.
Mm.
I just went, oh, I can help these people because I see what they're missing and I see how to fix it. So that's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful. But there were so many people that had published a book, spent so much money publishing that by the time it came to the marketing piece, mm-hmm. they were like, forget it. I'll just see how it goes.
Well, don't judge me, but it's kind of how it went for me.
Right.
Yeah. We
and could,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get it. And it's, yeah. And, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, they have a lot of other things going on and not mm-hmm. just their book. Right. And,
right.
It's a new world. I mean, it's, and you know, at least for most people who are not in your world. So you've got now, and when you made that shift, you had special knowledge, unique knowledge about how to solve their problems. Okay. So, now today, what does a typical client look like, or what's the avatar of the person you work with, and really walk us through how you help them?
They are a business owner, an attorney, a wealth advisor, a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
They have unique, specialized knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
They are constantly telling people the same thing that can easily be turned into a book.
Mm.
We weave in some of their personal stories, some mm-hmm. of their client stories, other experiences,
mm-hmm.
make it into a book. And then we take that book and we weave it into their overall brand marketing. And so that's what I'm going to tell you for the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't think of your book in a silo in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's part, I mean, unless you're like going left and starting something new.
Right, right. Got it.
Your book is an extension of your business. Mm-hmm. And it's the sure. greatest marketing tool ever in the world, ever.
Yeah. So it's not just marketing the book. That's how I should be thinking about this.
Exactly. And there are a lot of book marketing people who will just talk to you about marketing your book. And that's not me.
Got it.
Again, this forest piece.
Yeah, yeah. mm-hmm. Right.
I'm big picture. Mm-hmm. I see how this book can be leveraged mm-hmm. for more opportunities and more clients.
Yeah. Got it. So someone, let's say a real estate brokerage, they have several agents who work for them, and they really need to market better. And so they've got a book sort of in the works, or an idea of a book, mm-hmm. and they come to you.
Mm-hmm.
What does that process look like? How can you help them?
I think I watch too many real estate shows on television, but I love them so much. So my idea is, who are their client, right? Because mm-hmm. You don't just generally say, well, I work with everybody, because sure. then you end up working with nobody.
Right.
So whoever their ideal client is, we're going to tailor the book to them. So my most recent real estate show is the Nest Seekers one in the Hamptons. That's the one okay. I've been. I think it's called Selling Camp. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Their ideal client is somebody who wants to buy a $14 to $16 million home in the Hamptons. So they could write a book talking about the benefits of moving to the Hamptons, talking about some of their best client stories where they got a new, what's the word when you like when the price of the home that sells is a record, that's it. A record price on this home, and here's how they did it. Talking about the benefits of working with them because they are, they'll hold your hand and they'll take you for champagne after, whatever. So it, and it doesn't have to be a long book, but it can be a book that introduces the client to maybe, if there's like one particular team of realtors, maybe each of them writes a chapter.
That's good.
Here's what inspired me to become a realtor, and here's how I love helping my clients because, our relationship is forever. It's not just a transactional thing.
Sure.
There are just so many different ways. And then you take this book and you send it out. Or if you have a broker's open, which I don't know if that happens in real life or only on TV. I don't know, but because it could be just on TV, but
Yeah,
assuming
I don't
there
know if
is a
that's,
broker's open,
this is like
you.
when lots of brokers show up at the same place,
Yes,
or okay.
yes.
I think those happen. Yeah.
Okay. So you have you give the book out as a gift,
Yeah, got it.
and so then, or to all the people in your brokerage, they give it to
Sure.
their clients. Like there are just so many ways to just it's a touch point, yet another touch point, because especially for realtors, and I know this because the realtor that I worked with to buy the home that I've been in for about 5 years, I text him all the time.
That's
I have
awesome.
told him I am never moving ever again. I have moved across the country one, twice, three times, three times. I moved across the country three times. I said, David, I am never moving again. Every year on our house anniversary, we get cookies. He understands the value of relationships because
Relationship,
I will
yeah.
tell you that anybody I meet, I will refer that man.
So good.
And so that book, and I've tried to get him to write a book. We're still working on it.
Still working on
So any time that you can have yet another touch point with the people,
Sure.
then they don't feel abandoned, and you never know when they're going to want to work with you again.
Right. So do you work with anyone who doesn't want to write a book, or that's it's all about using books as part of.
It's generally about using
Got it.
books.
Okay. So as far as telling your personal story, not your story, but one of your clients' stories, what are some mistakes that people make when telling their story? Maybe they go on a podcast and tell their story, or maybe they write a book or start to write a book and tell their story, or even just said informally. At a dinner party or something. What are some mistakes that people make when telling their story?
Well, if you share more than you wanted to, maybe you had a little bit too much alcohol.
Right. Good point.
And there are people who write books and then they backtrack. I shouldn't have said that. So I think be judicious in what you say and what you share.
Sure. That's a good point.
But on the flip side, I have a client right now and I made him go back and I said, you need to inject yourself into this book because right now it is a strict how-to, and I could print this out in a PDF.
Right, ChatGPT can give this to
ChatGPT could do it. Yeah,
you. Right.
exactly. So I think that even if you don't feel comfortable sharing personal information, you can still share information about your mission and your purpose, and that's personal enough.
That's really good. That's great. All right. So, and now before I jump into some rapid fire questions today, what does your business look like? As put your entrepreneur hat back on, running your business. Up to you how much detail you want to share, but how's your business doing overall today?
I mean, we're growing. We're going in the top right, up to the right.
Yeah, there
That's
you
the
go.
direction that
Awesome.
it's not fast.
Yeah,
It's not
gotcha.
fast, but it has to be.
Sure.
It's even, it's a good pace, and I'm
nice.
Feeling good.
Awesome.
I've gotten out of the weeds.
Yeah. How have you done that? Did you
have a virtual assistant. I have a virtual assistant, and I've also just, you know, I've built a team around for pieces of the publishing process that I don't want to do. Mm. I will oversee them, but I'm not going to do them.
Got it.
So I would say,
yeah. And just jumping back real quickly, because so you'll walk this client through the whole process of the idea of the book,
All the way through publishing and marketing,
mm-hmm. and really using that marketing of that book as part of their overall marketing strategy, personal branding, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Got it. Awesome. All right. You ready for some rapid fire questions?
Hit me with it.
This one trips people up sometimes. Okay. What is one thing that people misunderstand about you, Melanie?
I think they think I'm an extrovert.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought I was too, but it turns out I'm not. I'm a social introvert. I love people, but to regenerate myself, I have to go curl up in a ball alone.
I would say I'm similar to that for sure. Yeah. What's one of your biggest failures that we haven't talked about?
How much time do you have? just kidding. We don't have a lot of time. My biggest failure is not seeing my worth soon enough.
Got it. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, coffee or a drink or whatever, whom would you choose?
Okay, well, today I would say Machiavelli because I've been reading The Prince.
Okay.
That's my nighttime reading these days, and go. I have questions.
Questions. Love it. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it?
Well, first, I would invest it in places that it's going to generate more money. And then I would buy a Birkin bag.
Nice. Anything else?
No. That's it. I'm investing it and buying myself a handbag.
There you go. As far as your business goes, what's one challenge that you're facing right now? There's always a challenge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I was going to pick one. Challenge is, I think, time and my schedule mm-hmm. right now, because I'm trying to pack a whole lot into not a lot of time.
Sure.
And I'm finding that, you know, I have days where it's back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
And I really don't love that.
Yeah. Totally get that. What's one piece of advice that you would give to someone starting out? Let's say someone who's an entrepreneur and they may or may not want to write a book or even try to tell their story. What's one piece of advice you would give them?
They don't want to write a book. They may want to write a book.
They're not sure if they should write a book or even really promote their own personal brand. What's one piece of advice to help them think through that process?
If you have a story to tell that you think can help somebody else, then don't be afraid to share it.
That's a great answer. It really is. I mean, it's because so many people either just get embarrassed or think that it's, you know, it's not all about me. So why should I be talking about myself? Right. But you're actually hurting other people in a sense by not sharing your story if your story could benefit someone else. So I love that. If you, Melanie, you like change, if you could start another business next week, what would it be?
I think I would want to buy a lot of properties and then have like buy rental properties.
Yeah. Love that. That's a great answer. A lot of our listeners will like that too. Speaking of books, what is a book or two? I know you have a book out, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is a book or two that you can recommend along with your book?
The Go-Giver by Bob Berg.
Great book.
Fangirled hard on that poor man. I love that, man. yeah. So awesome. I would recommend that as a great place to start as an entrepreneur, because it upends the whole like knock people down idea.
Absolutely.
When you build others up.
And talk about your book, your recent book. Tell us
Sure.
about that.
It's called Make a Big Impact with Your Book, Author Marketing Strategies for Long-Term Success. And I really dive into content marketing and how you can take your book and have it recreate constantly more marketing for your business.
Yeah, my marketing person, we joke that I can't give her enough content, and she just loves content so that she can repurpose it, and I love that advice. I feel like books and podcasts now, it's almost like we used to view websites. It's like you kind of need it. You
Yep,
need
it's
something like
true.
that.
That's true.
Awesome. How about something controversial in your industry that you see going on that you could talk about? You don't have to name
Yeah.
names, but
Oh,
anything.
yeah. Well, what I'll say is there's a lot of, I think I started with there's predatory behavior in the publishing industry, and people are not honest about what, publishing a book can do for you. They'll say it's going to change your life. But if
Right,
nobody knows about your book, all it's going to do is change your bank account and it's going to be lower
the wrong way. Sure.
the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So, yeah.
oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Do you work with clients who have a book out like me?
Yeah,
And
absolutely. Yeah. I work with clients who have written the book and they've seen no traction. It's
Got
very
it.
common.
Got it. How about emerging challenges in your industry? What do you see in the next, say, 5 years as
ChatGPT, because
absolutely.
I love ChatGPT. I love it for marketing pieces and stuff like that. But you can't write a book with ChatGPT. And you also cannot make an audiobook with a fake voice.
I could feel the frustration coming across.
Well, you just can't do it. It's and you know, it, I understand wanting the easy way out, but it's not
Sure.
an easy button,
Well, and I
unfortunately.
think we touched on it earlier, but it's like the human element, the story side of things is what's going to be more and more valuable as time goes on, as AI does serve more of a real purpose. It's that human element you just can't replace.
Absolutely.
Melanie Hirshhorn, where can our listeners find you online?
It's my website, VIPbookmarketing.com. Everything is there, free resources, all the fun stuff.
Fantastic. What have I not asked you that you wish I had? Anything else you want to cover?
I think that if I can just say one more thing, it would be about how unique your story is as a human. And that even if you think it's boring, other people are going to find it interesting.
That's really good. Fantastic. Well, Melanie, thank you for sharing your time and your story and being vulnerable with us. We definitely appreciate that. And love to have you back on, and we can talk about how, maybe you help me take my book to number one best-selling status or something.
Love it. Love it.
No, but
Thanks.
this has been great. This has been really good, both your own entrepreneurial journey, but also how you can add practical value to the entrepreneur out there who's listening. So thank you so much for spending your time, which is your most valuable resource, with us.
Thank you.
And thank you to the listener out there as well for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment, so you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.